Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. Today we're asking, why should you read short stories? The novel is the literary format that usually steals all the limelight, but tucked away on bookcases among those 500 pages are slimmer numbers that hold rich, concise tales best enjoyed in one sitting. Like poetry, people are quick to announce the demise and then the revival of the short story, but actually, they can always be found all over the place, in books, newspapers, magazines, and online, or even on the stage or the radio. Today, I've invited in a couple of writers to explain their relationship with these live, lithe texts and tell us why the short story doesn't play second fiddle to the novel and is more than just its word count. My guests today are the writers Chris Power and Elizabeth Day. Chris writes about short stories for the likes of The Guardian and The New Statesman, as well as writing short stories himself. His debut collection, Mothers, is out this spring. Elizabeth is the author of last year's brilliant novel, The Party, amongst others, and co-founder of Pindrop, a storytelling studio that celebrates short fiction through competitions, performances, and entertainment. She's also contributing to an anthology of short stories out this summer called A Short Affair, which is a Pindrop production. Welcome to the programme, both of you.
Thanks for having me.
We've got through our sort of preliminary notes of what we've had for lunch, and we've found some poor supplies in the back of the January cupboard. So let's turn to a richer subject, the ever perennial short story. People have written about whether or not their time is now again, or whether there's a market for them at all, or whether they're sadly the new poetry, i.e. a little bit nothing sometimes. But we've obviously got two experts here in the studio. So let's take the bull by the horns. Chris, I think I'll start with you. A short story, is it a story that's short, or is it something else altogether?
I think it can be both of those
things. It's a $64 billion question.
It certainly is. I mean, it makes sense to apply some sort of length restriction to it, because it's a short story. So people have pitched that at different levels. Like, some people say anything above 10,000 words is a novella, or some people say, you know, Conrad wrote 30,000 word pieces that are short stories and 25,000 word pieces that are novels. Or so it quickly becomes quite... swampy ground that you get into. But
length is a sort of definite. Everyone knows when a short story is becoming a novel. But is there something of the form of the writing and the structure?
I think yes. I mean, I think you're certainly sort of looking at, certainly in this kind of short stories I like this, you're looking at intensity. You might be looking at, you know, a single instant or someone reflecting on a particular passage in their life, whereas, you know, again, you quickly get into sort of comparing it to the novel when they are distinct forms. But certainly the things short stories don't do so well is sort of show change over time, whereas a novel, you know, you're living with perhaps a set of characters and you're really seeing them develop. Say Natasha in War and Peace, you know, mm-hmm. becomes four different people over the course of that novel. You really see a girl become a woman. The short story, there just isn't time for that, unless you're a sort of sui generis genius like Lydia Davis, who can seem to collapse everything into a couple of pages. But I do go back to Poe, who said, you know, a short story is really a piece of writing that's designed to be read in one sitting. And he sort of put a time limit of an hour on that.
Yeah.
I think reading Joyce's The Dead would take me a bit longer than an hour. That's about 15,000 words. But, you know, within those sort of hazy parameters.
I'd do some reading exercises to get fit for that one.
I need to tone up.
So there's something, so you've kind of introduced there, Chris, to kind of a bit of the idea, not necessarily of the market, but of a quite strict parameter, of which maybe there needs to be, maybe there doesn't need to be, but in terms of us talking about it in the half an hour allotted here, we need to have a time constraint, I suppose. Elizabeth, we introed you as saying that you're part of Pindrop, and that is putting on a short story competition. It's being judged, I think, in July. How does that work? Why did you think now is a good time? Or why do you think the short story was a good example of Pindrop's intentions and dipping a foot into fiction?
Well, Pindrop was entirely founded around the notion of the short story back in 2012, I think it was now. And it was me and my very good friend Simon Oldfield, who had an art gallery at the time. And we had this idea that short stories were something that had been overlooked for a while. I mean, now they're very on trend, as we know, because we're discussing it on a podcast.
Don't say that in front of Chris. He hates that. We'll come to that later.
I'm turning my head for
But there was this notion that as children, we're often read aloud to, and that can be an incredibly wonderful and relaxing and moving experience. But as adults, we miss out on that, particularly in our constant hyper-connected culture where we're always on our phones or in front of a screen. And so it developed as a really simple idea. And I actually read the short stories to begin with in Simon's Art Gallery, and we did it weekly. And it massively took off. And there seemed to be a real thirst for people to come along, switch off their phones, and have this moment. And it was never more than about half an hour or 40 minutes. That's the joy of a short story, is that you can listen to it, be read aloud to, and then go on with the rest of your evening. And from then on, it snowballed. And now we have amazing authors like Julian Barnes and William Boyd and Graham Swift, and incredible actors like Dame Eileen Atkins and Juliet Stevenson. And we do readings in beautiful places like the Royal Academy and Soho House. And so it's hugely snowballed, and there's a big demand. And I think the reason that there is this demand is because of what I touched on, because we're thirsting after a real tangible experience where we can connect with other people, but also connect with our imaginations in a way that doesn't belong to a computer or a Netflix box set, which they have their charms and they have their purpose. But sometimes it's so nice to connect with a direct, tangible experience.
And is brevity some of the soul of the success of the short story at the moment? And the fact that you your evenings have been such a success, your short story evenings have been such a success, you know, actors and geography and the wonderful places you've done it aside, simply the fact that people hear a whole story from beginning to end.
Definitely.
The success of Netflix and the binge watching culture and all the rest of it is something. But when you have to watch 24 episodes of something to find out what happens in the end, that's not so good. I mean, that's a lovely winter project to get cozy in. But there must be an attraction of the idea of closure to the short story.
Definitely. I think box sets are wonderful, but can be overwhelming. And there's that sense of box set guilt, which is like, you know, I've never watched Mad Men. And I feel so embarrassed. It's almost like admitting to having leprosy in public when you say that. The fact that you can have a complete experience with a beginning, a middle and an end. And just touching on what Chris was saying so eloquently, I think part of the charm of a short story is that it does so much in a short space of time. With a novel, part of a novel's charm is that it can be sprawling and big and expansive. But with a short story, every sentence has to count. Every sentence is a distillation of some kind of emotion or action or intent. And the best masters of the short story can do so much in a few words. And that's why I read them, because it's like the essence of literature for me.
Chris, who are some of the masters? I always enjoyed reading de Maupassant at school. And it might sound a bit naff to say it, but I always kind of feel like reading a book of Roald Dahl short stories, Tales of the Unexpected, they're so wonderful. We kind of know the endings of so many of these stories now. Mm. But without wanting to do a disservice to the idea of a short story and what a short story is and the wonderful heights they can attain, it can sometimes be a wonderful palate cleanser for reading big works of fiction, or especially for you two as well, writing works of fiction. Tell us about some of the masters of the trade, or who you regard as some of the masters of the trade, people that you've mentioned in the pieces you've written about short fiction.
Well, certainly, I mean, Maupassant, Chekhov, Elizabeth Bowen wrote a, I was going to say famous, but only amongst short story geeks, I'm sure, but they're famous preface to a Faber book of the short stories, I think in the 30s, perhaps. And she sort of started it with Chekhov and Maupassant, because there are various debates about where does the short story start. Walter Scott story, The Two Drovers, or was it over here, or was it over there? But Chekhov and Maupassant certainly gave birth to the modern short story. And it is a much more modern form than the novel. You know, the novel you can trace back to Quixote, or even, you know, arguably before that. But the short story as we know it is a extremely late 19th century, sort of into the 20th century form. But that's a very long way of getting around to some good short story writers. But the thing with Maupassant,
we need a bit of context.
You talked about getting to the point, but actually he wrote in sort of two modes, and he wrote an incredible amount of stories in a sort of really like a 10-year period in between sort of learning from his was his uncle Flaubert, or was his uncle's friend Flaubert? Anyway, Flaubert was involved in his tutelage, and then he died of syphilis because he was such a bon viveur. Yeah. And, you know, he had this short but incredibly productive amount of time. But he was writing for these newspapers that would print short stories in amongst news stories, and they needed like 2,000 words, 2,000 words, 2,000 words, 2,000 words. And those stories are actually his least satisfying, I think. Some of his most famous, like The Necklace, and he's famous for these sort of twist endings. Yeah. But he wrote these longer stories, like Buddha Swift being the most famous one, and an incredible one called Madame Tellier's Establishment, about these prostitutes who decamp from this seaside town and go to this village and sort of scandalize the village for over a summer. And all the men in the seaside town are full of remorse and longing because all their prostitutes have gone. But these are kind of him at his best, because he has got a bit of space. He doesn't need to like tie everything up in 1,000 or 2,000 words, which is really a limiting length of time. But he has the chance to bring in characterization, but without losing that kind of intensity that the short story can offer and does sort of really demand. Chekhov is an incredible master. In fact, in Russia, I think it's right to say that he's a short story writer who also wrote some plays, whereas here it's obviously very much the reverse. They're kind of amazed at that flip. But he's a really interesting writer to look at in terms of the short story, because it's quite hard to pin down what he does or to pin down an effect. You can't really summarize a Chekhov story, whereas with a novel you can sort of say, oh, what's your novel about? Well, it's about this, and I'm looking at these themes, I'm looking at that. Not to reduce it, but you can give a broad sense of what it's about. With a short story, you often kind of have to tell the whole story to tell what it's about, because it's not so easy to boil it down to a few plot points or a particular theme. A great academic who kind of devoted his professional life to the short story, a guy called Charles May in America, he talks about how short stories are all about, like novels are about, and this is like very broad brush, obviously, and you can find counterexamples left, right and center, but novels are about explaining. They're about getting into a situation and exploring it and really mapping it out. Short stories are more about mysteries, that they're lyrical as opposed to philosophical. So you can't really, it's not about explaining. It is more about a sensation. It is more, like you say, the reaction at a pin drop reading. Everyone's sort of, you know, under a spell of some sort. And yes, you might afterwards be able to say that a story was about a particular thing. But in Chekhov's case, that different so people we, can often cite different things that it's.
Are we sort of boiling it down then to the fact that it's a song, not an album, it's an aria, not an opera? Is that simple? I mean, because it has to have, there is tone and there has to be a sort of catchiness to it, right?
I think there's a problem in just saying a short story is short, because actually just picking up on what Chris was saying so elegantly there. A novel, you do have more space to explain what motivates your character and to unwind the plot. And I think my big mistake when I first came to write my first ever short story when I was about 15 was that I treated it...
Oh, your friends were in it.
Yeah, well that. And I treated it as... Well, actually, I was writing as a sort of 85-year-old woman who just lost her husband. But
more sophisticated than my one, then.
But I sort of treated it as a synopsis for a novel, and I didn't realise I was doing that. So it wasn't actually a short story, because I think with a short story, a really brilliant writer of a short story has to know already who their characters are, what the setup is, and has to come from that position of knowledge. It's almost like you've had to do the whole work of like writing a novel to be able to sit down and write a short story.
Okay, that's because, really interesting.
Yeah, you need to come and you need to be brave enough to make those choices, to cut back your language and to put in a sentence that will reveal. Everything has to do something in a short story. It has to reveal something. And that's why I think that incredibly hard to do. And I know you haven't asked me, but can I mention some of my favourite short stories?
Yes, please.
Okay, short story writers. So,
that was a note. That question, when there are two guests in the studio, Elizabeth, that question is open to the whole floor.
Okay, fine. I just...
Stop muscling in on Chris's question.
Well, she noticed that I've signally failed to answer it properly.
No, not at all. It's just, I think I read short stories because of that distillation. I read them for an emotive response. So a lot of the writers that I most like are brilliant at doing that. So I would just mention Alice Munro, who really is incredible. And what you were saying, Chris, earlier about the passing of time, she is one of the rare people who's able to look at the passing of time within a short story, to the extent that one of her short stories about a couple dealing with dementia was made into a full-length feature film, and I can't remember the name.
Of the Bear Came Around the Mountain.
Yes, that's right. And Laurie Moore, I know we talked about earlier, is incredible. Raymond Carver, talking about someone who you can't ever pinpoint what it is about one of his stories that you love, but they're so lasting.
So spare.
They're so spare and wonderful. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, obviously she's an incredible novelist, but her collection of short stories are phenomenal. And Jhumpa Lahiri is also someone I love. Mm-hmm. And probably my favourite of all time is Catherine Mansfield, who wrote The Garden Party and The Daughter of the Late Colonel. And again, I think it all comes down to a sense of quiet confidence that makes you feel safe as a reader, but also leaves that there's a kind of beautiful sense of longing to the best short stories, I think, where you can read them again and again and never quite get a grip of them. But you know that there's something about it that keeps drawing you back.
And something, I suppose, I was going to mention Elizabeth Taylor's The Devastating Boys is something that I love as a collection of short stories. And it's such a pleasurable world to inhabit, despite its prickliness. In her case, sort of post-war, sort of slightly sad England and sort of slightly provincial sad England, her protagonists kind of unknowable women, and but women of great strength and stuff. But there is something amazingly addictive and pleasurable about the universe that you inhabit as the reader there, and as someone that becomes part of the story. I suppose there is that. I suppose there is a simple idea of wanting more from the story constantly. I suppose that's a sign of the success of it, maybe.
Well, and that comes that sort of idea of I think in a lot of those writers you mentioned, and a lot of the writers that I get the most of, there's a lot of ambiguity in the work, so it really invites the reader to interpret. And some readers don't like that, and that might be a reason we can get to it later. Why short stories might not be as popular as the novel.
Yeah,
I think they do make certain.
Well, let's talk about that now, actually, because this is part of it. I think the idea of what is the market for the short story. I mean, I wonder why they aren't more successful. I wanted to pick you up on something that you wrote in one of your recent pieces, Chris. Neil Gaiman said the fairly decent teller of yarns, that's Neil Gaiman, sort of said, well, the short story should be having a golden age now because you can read it on your phone and other things. You didn't quite agree with him on that. And I wanted to know why, because I similarly thought, you know, there should be a service that where you get sent a short story a week for a small fee, and it should be a very fertile thing where people can say they like this, they didn't like that, whatever it is. But I felt that the medium that we use now could sort of ensure a golden age for the short story. Why not?
Well, I think your idea of sending a short story is fantastic, and I would be the first to sign up.
And you're going to do that? I might be some time.
I think what puzzled me about what Neil Gaiman said was he said, oh, because of our short attention spans, and stories are perfect for your iPad or Kindle. But, you know, I read War and Peace on my phone. It's that's not the only novel I've read.
You've got more memory than my phone.
but it's, you know, it's there. Your screen's your screen. But in fact, the problem I have with the short attention span argument, which you do hear a lot, and which on the surface of things makes sense. It's like, oh, it's short.
Do you think it's doing the short story down to say that it's sort of a practical it's a practical shape or size for an impractical age or something?
No, I think it's fundamentally misunderstanding that, because I think most short stories, say your average New Yorker story, is probably somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 words, something like that. You're looking at like half an hour, 40 minutes reading time. That's not how many people read, whereas you're reading a chapter in a novel or something. Laurie Moore has spoken about this, where she says, you know, people can read for 15 minutes here or there, and novels are designed to be, no one's going to sit down and read a novel for 12 hours. So that's sort of taken into account. You have your sort of passages in the novel, and you have breaks, unless you're reading like Javier Marías or someone wonderful like that, who you're like,
yes,
looking for
the,
where can I stop this? Yeah. I can't stop. You don't want to stop. But as a sort of 30-minute, 40-minute chunk of time, it's actually quite an awkward amount of time. And I think it's quite demanding. And I do think the short story, whatever it is something that can often lose its effect if you break it up. I mean, talking about Alice Munro, she's so subtle with how she sort of turns a story. Often they don't climax, as they sort of like fade out, but the climax is actually embedded somewhere in the story. But you can miss that if you're not really paying close attention, you know. And you might say, well, it was beautifully written, but, you know, it sort of fades away. But in fact, it's quite a demanding act. And so whereas the novel, yes, pick it up, put it down, it's kind of, it's there. short stories are just that awkward shape often.
I mean, can I just attack the premise of the question? Because I thought we were in a golden age of short stories and sales of short story collections were rising, aren't they?
I think the idea, I know Chris has written about this, was the idea that we keep on being told we're living in a golden age. Let's just shut up about the sales and accessibility to short stories and just they exist. You know, they're always going to exist. People are always going to want to read them. People are always going to want to write them. I suppose the question was couched in the premise that the publishing industry or people always are trying to flag up a new golden age.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder whether...
Just a marketing.
I know Chris has written about whether there is any point in saying it. Why don't we just write them and read them and it exists and it's fine?
I think we are... Okay, not in a golden age, but I think we're in an age where short stories are getting slightly more attention than potentially they used to. And that's partly because some of our greatest novelists are also writing collections of short stories. So most recently, John McGregor won the Costa Novel Prize for his fantastic Reservoir 13. Mm. He is an extraordinary short story writer. I should have mentioned him earlier. He's one of my favourites. And he's done a few collections, but his latest one is a companion piece to Reservoir 13. It's the Reservoir Tapes, which were broadcast on Radio 4. We're allowed to mention rival outlets. But
I think people know it's there. It's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Failing Radio 4.
Yeah. So a horrible word. But in a way, like his short stories are quite multi-platform and you can engage with them on many different levels. And I think that possibly has helped bring the short story back into public attention. And I feel, I mean, I haven't seen a copy of Chris's book yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. But
Beautifully bound as well. Very nice cover.
Exactly.
Gorgeous.
Well, publishers, I feel, go that extra effort with a collection of short stories to make them look appealing on the shelf and make people pick them up because they know that they're in a crowded market and have to compete with many other novels and nonfiction. And actually, nonfiction, that's another point I'd like to make, is that I think at the moment we're so barraged with the perpetual constancy of the news cycle that we as human beings are almost struggling to keep up with the pace of what is actually happening in current affairs, some of which seems more fictional than fiction.
I think more and more people are taking solace in fiction from the horrible world of fact, actually. I genuinely think that seems to be happening. I mean, I get a train into work rather than a tube. I see so many more people reading books than I see people reading the Metro.
Oh, that's so great.
I mean, I do see that. I don't know whether I live on a particularly astute line.
Where do you live?
I really don't think it is, in fact. But you know what I mean?
I live in the British Library.
Yes, exactly. I won't have it any other way. I wanted to ask before we run out of time, personally, whether the constraints of the short story was something that you both found particularly attractive and whether you found that the constraint also... As we know, all three of us being journalists, being people that write to word limits, I always find that sets me free. I always feel like it's a good first thing for possibly a novelist, possibly a short story writer. You both can tell me whether actually just having that limit, or at least an idea of a limit in your head, slightly subconsciously maybe, sets your imagination free, Elizabeth.
Yes, it does. It also imposes challenges. But part of the reason I love writing a short story is because often when you're writing a novel and a character acts in a certain way that might be tricky or quote-unquote unlikable, or your character just does something unexpected, quite often an editor will say, we need to explain why that happens. So can you put something in this character's backstory that would explain that? And with a short story, I feel that as long as you as an author know your character intrinsically, you don't need to explain. And that taps into the ambiguity that we all love about short stories and the slight enigma that lingers once you've finished a really good short story. And so I like that aspect of it. I mean, I wouldn't put myself up there as a master of short storytelling because I do think it's incredibly difficult. It really is very difficult to get it right. And I'm still learning the craft all the time. And the way that I learn is to read other short story writers who I really admire and who kind of impress me with their deftness of structure and the risks that they take. And when I write novels, I'm very aware of a reader's attention span and needing to draw the reader through the chapters. So my chapters tend to be structured within the chapter, not as a short story, but as a way of leading the reader on to the next exciting thing that's going to happen. And with a short story, I'm aware that is an entirely independent structure, but within that structure, I also need to do the same thing. So I need to lead the reader through paragraph by paragraph.
Yeah. There's no kind of right answer to it, obviously, but it's an interesting one, whether you're taking the whole thing as a mass and trying to, you know, I kind of, you're taking a story and you're chipping bits off the block like a sculptor with a block,
that's rather than the other way around. That's how she sculpts. It was like taking bits off to get to the essence of the material. And that's exactly what I think a short story is.
And just finally, because I think we've almost had our allotted half hour on the subject of short stories, I wanted to ask you both about the satisfaction of something that you can begin and end in one sitting, actually. The idea of when you get a collection of short stories, and it's a different thing to novels and reading, I guess, War and Peace on your phone, although it can be done, and although the chapters are short, as you've mentioned, Chris, there is something really satisfying in knowing the beginning and end of a story, the satisfaction, actually, of closing the book, which is a sort of physical thing, which is very satisfying. Is that, to me, underestimated, the idea that... Because it's one of those things where you get all of Hemingway's short stories, all of Ballard's short stories in a big book, and you're kind of wading through it and you want to read something else. I think the slim volumes... And I hope yours is a great success, because it's wonderful and it's exactly this form. There is something about the concision also of the amount of short stories you have in a collection, which is actually very physically satisfying. I wonder if that's a real mug's game, Elizabeth, or whether there's truth in that.
I agree with you. Yeah, I really agree with you. I mean, I do a lot of my reading TMI probably in bed, so before I go to sleep, because actually I really like leaving my phone on airplane mode and having at least half an hour of just... calm and re-engaging with the actual world. And when I do that, I quite like to have a natural gap. So if I'm reading a novel, I'll read to the end of the chapter. And what you get with a short story is the complete experience by the end of a chapter. And that is, on just a purely practical level, really lovely.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
It's satisfying.
It's really satisfying.
It's not to be underestimated, right?
No.
I don't know.
And again, sometimes I love that feeling of you get so involved in a short story and in the characters and you love it, and then you get to the end and you feel a bit sad about saying goodbye to those characters. And you think, well, no other short story is ever going to compare. And then you read the next one in the collection and it's really brilliant in a different way. I feel I remember short stories a lot more than I remember novels.
Well, you can remember the real swing of the story, short swing of the story, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah. And because it's a more intense experience, and often it's more visual sometimes, because you're having these images implanted in your head by someone who's telling a fantastic story and at the top of their game. So for all of those reasons, I say hooray for the short story.
Indeed. Chris, I'll ask you the same question before we go. Do we underestimate the satisfaction, the physical satisfaction of being able to turn that page and have got to the end of a story, or to close the covers of the book at the end of the night and have had, you know, have reached a conclusion?
I think that's a very great strength of the story. And I think it comes back to intensity as well. I think it's having that sort of sealed off experience from beginning to end. Like Colin Barrett published an amazing story in the first issue of The New Yorker this year. Whoever's There, Come On Through, I think it's called. And I didn't know it was going to be in there. And I was like, got an email from The New Yorker. Fantastic. The story's in there. And not a personal email from The New Yorker. It was just, you know, a subscriber's mailing list email. And it was just this sort of, it's a brilliant story. It's just this hit of intensity that was delivered into my day.
Yeah.
Kind of like your short story subscription service that kind of arrived unexpectedly and completely changed my day for the better.
And Cat Person in The New Yorker, which went viral on Twitter was amazing, and I loved it. And I, again, that my attention was drawn to that because of social media, actually.
Mm-hmm. It is one of those things. It can just ping into your day somehow from nowhere, or you can pick an old volume off a shelf or something you get sent maybe for review, and you flick to the middle of it rather than start at the beginning, and it's just the most wonderful thing. And I think it gives us such a different satisfying hit than a novel can. And as I say, sometimes I suppose, our palates need to be refreshed. We need to kind of hit reset on how and why we judge the things we like and we don't, I suppose. And they're so strong for that. Power to them. Thank you both so much for your wit and wisdom around the table today. That brings us to the end of Culture. Thank you, as I said, to my guests Elizabeth Day and Chris Power. Chris's collection of short stories, Mothers, is out on the 1st of March and it is published by Faber and Faber. And you can read Elizabeth's contribution to A Short Affair this July when it's published by Simon & Schuster. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound, and thank you very much for tuning in.